Welcome to the Follow My Lead podcast, where we transfer stories and best practices of today's leaders to the leaders of tomorrow with your host, John Eads.
Stereo Satrasimus is the CEO of Blue Line Rental, the fastest, safest, and most reliable provider of construction rental equipment. As CEO, he's responsible for a network of 140 branches across North America and a staff of over 2,000 employees. He literally has led teams all over the world, and he shares some of his secrets to leading teams and how to be recognized as a potential leader. He is a motivating man who truly understands that leadership isn't about sitting behind a desk. You can learn more about Blue Line Rentals at BlueLineRentals.com. Without further introduction, here's my interesting conversation with Stereo Satrasimus. Just a quick housekeeping item. This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft, an online learning company focused on developing the modern professional. Want to increase your leadership potential? Check out our brand new Getting Leadership Ready program at LearnLoft.com. Well, Stereo, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
So before we kind of get into your new role with Blue Line, take me back to how your leadership journey really started. Was there a, maybe even as a kid, is there a moment when you said, you know, I want to be a leader. I think I have the ability to lead people.
So it's an interesting question. I think when I look back, when I go back to my school days, if you will, I realize now it wasn't intentional, but I ended up always wanting to be the leader of that group that I was a part of. So whether that was a, Beta Alpha Psi, which was a business fraternity in college, or, you know, whether it was in high school as part of a different, like a honors society or something like that. I always ended up being the guy who was president of it and led it. And again, it wasn't intentional, I don't think, back then. But now as I kind of look back, it became a natural thing. And then when I went into my business career, I started out at Deloitte in accounting and very quickly moved into a startup called United Rentals. And even then, I came in at an entry-level role where I was doing due diligence on M&A, at mergers and acquisitions that we were doing. And what I found was very quickly, I moved out of the back office and actually was helping to run the deals, and I eventually ran the M&A team. And then I got lucky. I got lucky that I had a CEO who kept after me for a couple of years to say, hey, I want you to actually go and run one of our businesses. And at first, I had kind of pushed back on it because I was enjoying what I was doing, but he really kept after me. And sometimes you just got to get lucky in life where somebody takes an interest in you, and hopefully you're not too stubborn and you eventually listen. And I did. He threw a little monkey wrench into it. At the time, I had a pretty senior role as the person running M&A, but he said to go into operations, I needed to go have a job that was a couple of levels down, actually be a district manager. So I went from wearing suits to work, and I got a white Ford F-150 pickup truck, steel-toed boots, and a handful of locations that became mine as a district manager. And the reason he said that, and I'll never forget it, he said, you can't intellectualize experience. And he was so right. That experience that I had as a district manager, where I had a dozen locations and I had to deal with, you know, a pool contractor whose backhoe broke down, or a technician who was having a problem and couldn't get to work that day, or I had to meet a salesperson out on a job site because they were having trouble with a customer. Those experiences have formed what I've then been able to do, where I've run businesses across North America, Europe, the UK, Australia, Pacific, and in Latin America. But it all started with that opportunity to go and be on the ground and really experience what it's like to lead people at an entry level versus just jumping into something that was already set up.
Yeah.
Can intellectualize experience.
I love that. And you really hit on three key things there that I want to dig into a little bit. The first is solving problems. It sounds like when you got to that two levels down role, you really got into the business of solving problems and helping people solve problems. What did you learn from that particular experience about people and helping people solve problems out in the field that now you apply today? Maybe it's a specific example that you can think of, or how do you approach that now
with solving problems in terms of leadership?
You know, what clicked for me when I started to actually run parts of the business was, to me, it doesn't matter whether you're a B2B company or a B2C company. At the end of the day, you're always dealing with an individual, whether that individual is an employee or whether that individual is the representative of the customer. And that has really put me in good stead through the rest of my career. I always think of the person first. And if we do that, it helps you to really digest down problems into something that are manageable, and it doesn't overwhelm you that you think just about a mass of people or a company that's right. your customer. So I like to focus on the individual and understand what their pain is, understand what their challenge is, and see if I can't help to solve it. And huh? And so I'll give you a great example. When I was running my first sales team, and I had a sales guy who really had a problem in that he was a good salesperson in the classic sense, but he was terrible at planning. And so what he was always so busy, but he never materialized his full capability. So one of the things he and I did was we sat down and we put a plan together, how he would plan his week, what day of the week he would use to make his calls so he could set up his meetings. And really then, at the time, I hadn't realized that, but that was the beginning of where it clicked for me around the whole thing that I do now around selling the Blue Line way and focusing on activity-based selling versus just focusing on the revenue that's generated. Because, you know, to be successful in sales, it all starts at the top of the funnel, which is your plan and the meetings that you generate. But that's a great example of focusing on an individual's challenge and then realizing that that has broader applicability to other people.
So you really began to focus on the process instead of the results, high level.
Exactly.
And so you mentioned something about being aware and thinking of others, that one person. How do you go about doing that, specifically for someone younger, you know, someone in their 20s or 25, 30, first job maybe? It's not typically their first thought to think of somebody else and helping someone else. Is there anything specifically that you did or that you do to practice thinking about somebody else over yourself? Because it's a core tenet of great leadership.
So for me, that's all about making sure you're not only thinking about yourself, but you're thinking about how you're perceived. So the perception of you really drives who you ultimately are seen as by a broader set of people. So to do that, though, you can't do that behind your desk. You can't do that by being self-obsessed. You need to be making connections with people. And so for my job, for example, so our organization has 2,000 people. And what I try and do is I try and get out and see as many of them as I can. So I go out to a branch location and I go spend time with each and every employee that's there, ask them about themselves. You know, classic questions that I'll ask is, you know, where are you from? How long have you worked here? What did you do before you joined Blue Line? You know, have you lived in the area for a long time? Just a handful of questions about themselves, and people really enjoy that. They get something out of having somebody ask them about them. And if you use that with your teammates, if you use that with customers, no matter what job you have, you'll make a personal connection. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's that personal connection that I think makes you successful, because people then, when they think of you in a positive way. Too often, I see, and it doesn't matter what level you are, whether you're coming in as an entry level or whether you've been in business for 25 years, too many people talk and don't listen. They don't ask questions and then listen what people have to say. And the other one is, too many people don't actually do the simple thing of when they're in a meeting or when they're having a one-on-one with somebody, taking some notes down. You know, when you're talking to someone and you're having a one-on-one and they're giving you good information, it's impossible for you to retain it. And one of the things that I push my team to do and my people that are around me is, and I do it myself, I lead by example with this, is I always take notes. I always want to ask somebody a question, learn about them, and I write it down. And people see that sign of respect and they think of you in a positive way. So that's something that I've used for years and years. And whether, again, you're in a team of three or in a team of 3,000, you can use that. And I've used it and it's quite successful.
Well, I love it. It's so simple too. Just letting somebody else see you take a note about what they're saying, it almost instantaneously shows that you're engaged in the other person. So it's an actionable thing you can do to walk the walk instead of talk the talk, which is exactly what you just described. So it's a great tip.
And, you know, the great thing about it is you learn a lot. You know, I go back and I look at my notes. So back in the day when I first started this, I used to use those little black books with the little red bind, the red bind on the side. I think they're called red books. Anyways, I don't do that anymore. I'm paperless now. So everything that I do is on my iPad. I use NoteShelf and, you know, the Apple Pen, and I take all my notes electronically, and it's fantastic, my ability to catalog it and send it out to people when I have something that's interesting. So, you know, I constantly am taking notes about what I see and hear during the day and going back and rereading them. I've got, you know, this year's worth that every now and then I'll just pop open a notebook and say, I remember that meeting. Let me go back and check that out. And
yeah.
You always pick little things up if you do a good job of listening and taking notes.
I think what's interesting you say that is someone at your level, when the iPad's open or when the phone's open, that you're taking notes on Evernote or whatever you take notes on, you know, you don't worry.
NoteShelf's better than Evernote.
Oh, it is. Okay, good. I'll have to maybe make a switch. But you don't have to worry when a senior level person has that device open what they're doing on it, right? They're in it because they're engaged and they're willing to learn. I'm not so sure that's the case for a millennial or for a young professional. There's some concern over, are they scrolling through an Instagram account, or are they doing any of that stuff? Do you feel any of that if you have an employee or younger employee that has a device out when a meeting's going on? Is there any concern there for you?
You know, I think that's a risk for anyone, whether they're somebody who's in their 20s, 30s, 40s, or 50s. I think the risk of not being present in a given situation is there and something that we all could potentially fall victim to. You know, and I work hard not to have that happen as well. I know that the emails are piling up as you and I are sitting here speaking. I'm sure there'll be about 100 more that I have to eventually kind of get through and understand why people are reaching out to me. That is a risk. It's something that we work hard on in our meetings to ensure that people are present. And the best advice I can give is just that. Be present in the moment in which you're in. And if you're in a meeting, make sure that you're focused on that meeting, because ultimately you should be there for a reason. And if there's no reason for that meeting to be happening, if you're the leader, don't have the meeting. And if you're a team member and you don't think it was worthwhile, at the right time, have a discussion about it, but be present, and that's the best advice I can give.
Yeah, I like it. Be present. You also mentioned earlier about a mentor of yours or someone that gave you some really great advice. How important is mentorship in, one, getting to a leadership position, but then maybe, you know, talk about both. Once you're there, do you ever go back to those people, or maybe there's a couple people in your life that gave you some great advice. Do you ever go back to those people anymore? Now when new things come up at Blue Line that you might need advice for?
For sure. So I'm a big believer in mentoring that comes naturally. You know, I think there is a place for mentoring programs, but they have to be done right. Quite often, if those things are forced, I think they just become another box to check. Mm-hmm. But an opportunity to have a good mentor, an opportunity to be a good mentor is always around you, but it comes from making that connection again. It takes us back to the earlier discussion I was having, which is spending time with people, having one-on-ones, and listening to people. They may have some really good advice that you take on board, or you may have some good advice for them that hopefully they'll take on board. And throughout my career, again, I've been lucky enough to have a handful of folks like that that have moved the needle for me, and for sure I still reach out to them. I most recently had a great CEO when I was at Aggreko named Rupert Solms, who, you know, I worked with for 8 years and one of the best leaders I've ever seen. It's a bit in his blood. His grandfather was Winston Churchill. So
okay.
He's done an amazing job of channeling that. But then I had a great head of HR named Siegfried Putzer, who's still one of my best friends and a great mentor for me. And, you know, along the way, if you're willing to listen and if you're willing to be mentored, those opportunities will find you.
Did you seek those mentor relationships? Maybe even you've started by talking earlier in your career. Did you proactively seek those relationship or mentor relationships out, or did they kind of seek you?
So, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. I didn't seek them out with the way where I came into a meeting and said, I'd like you to be my mentor.
Right.
Which, again, that may be right for you if that's the situation you find yourself in. But for me, it all goes back to this idea that I'm always trying to learn about the people that I'm with. I try to spend time and understand their background and who they are and what they're about. And quite often what I find is those lead into natural relationships. Sometimes they can be acquaintances, other times they can be more. And for me, those are where the best mentor relationships that I've had really come about. But it always goes back to this idea of, you know, make a connection with people and you don't know where it's going to lead you.
Yeah. Well, it's great advice. You know, you're relatively new to Blue Line, a new CEO, and congratulations.
Thanks.
It's exciting. Anytime you move into a new role, you're most of the time you're maybe up against some adversaries, even within a company. Mm. How do you handle maybe an adversary or someone that looks at you and says, "Oh, he's not the right guy," you might have had that here, or you might not have. Is there anything that you've specifically done or that you think about to say, you know, you need everyone moving in the same direction to be successful as a leader? What do you do when you get people that might not buy into that vision?
So the first thing that I always do is I start off with one-on-ones. So I go around and I do tons of one-on-ones with my direct reports, with other key players in the business. So that's step one. What that allows me to do is to start to diagnose the common problems that the business has. Additionally, in that one-on-one, I'll do what I call a start-stop. What I ask is, if you were the CEO, what would you start doing? If you were the CEO, what would you stop doing? And I'll do 30, 40, 50 one-on-ones at the beginning. And then what I try and do is I go back and I look through all those discussions and I find the common themes. Because inevitably, you're going to have people who have their own personal view that isn't consistent with anything else you see. But if you find the consistencies across those 30, 40, 50 one-on-ones, I promise you those are the problems and the opportunities. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, even when you face people who are going to be resistors, ultimately, if you've touched the right people, it's very hard for them to resist something that comes out of a natural set of discussions with, you know, that many people, right? Because it's probably something they've even acknowledged. And so by diagnosing the problems first, then developing what the prescription is to solve those problems, that's part two. And that you do with your own experiences. Remember, you got to go back to, you can't intellectualize experience. So mm-hmm. for some of this stuff, you have had to have seen it and dealt with it before to figure out how to deal with it now, as well as then reach out to a few key people to help with that prescription. And then ultimately, once you've come up with the prescription, or another analogy I use is once you come up with a playbook for that team, you give the team the plays and you empower them to go execute the plays. You need to figure out if you've got enough athletes on the field to go execute them. Ultimately, though, you do have situations where you're going to have the folks that are just not going to get on board. And just like any sports team that you're a fan of, you know, that's why they trade people sometimes, right? You got to get the people who want to be on the team. And, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time forcing someone to be on a team they don't want to be on. And that's okay. So a ball player sometimes just needs a different stadium to play in. But what you want is you want a team that believes in the plays, believes that the issues that have been identified and the opportunities that have been identified are the ones that are going to move the needle. And if you get those folks all moving in the right direction, you're going to have a successful team.
How do you know when those people are on board or when you're not? I know there's not an exact science, but maybe what are some of the things that you look for in a team member of yours to see that they're moving in that direction that you've set out?
So something I use a lot is when I meet a new team of people, I say you can be one of two people in business. You can be the type of person that when you meet somebody, they start out with 100% trust, or when you meet somebody, they start out with zero and they have to build that trust. In my view, neither is right or wrong. It's just what type of person you are. For me, I'm somebody, when I come into a new team, everybody starts at 100. Right? It's up to you to decide, do you stay at 100? Exactly. Or do you work your way down? Now, the ones that stay towards the top and stay in that trust zone are the ones that I know are on the team. The ones that start to whittle that away are the ones that I have to work on, whether I can help them build it back up or whether they don't. What does that look like? That looks like you have a meeting, you debate. I like to brainstorm. I like to go through what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, but then we ultimately make a decision because you have to be decisive. Then I observe, which is when people go back to their teams. Are they on board? Are they delivering the messages in a way where I can get a sense that they're going through the organization, or aren't they? How do you test that? You test that by being out in the field. Too many leaders today try to run their business from the office because it's comfortable. You've got to be out in the field, and you see it. If you pay attention and you ask the right questions, you'll know when you go meet with a driver out of one of our branches or one of the sales guys, and you ask some simple questions about our strategy, if they can't articulate even little bits of it, you know you've got a problem.
Yeah.
You know you've got somebody in a leadership role who doesn't believe in what you're doing because they haven't passed it through the rest of their organization. So it's those kind of things, but you have to actively seek that. You don't learn that from sitting in the office, and you never will. You know, I say that this job is three things. Let's say it's a third manager, a third politician, and a third preacher. Right. So the third manager is the classic things about key performance indicator management, you know, you're setting up the strategy, all that.
Yeah.
The third politician is all about shaking hands and kissing babies. You got to get out in the field, and you've got to meet the people. You got to get their vote. And you know, just like a politician, you can't get their vote by sitting in their office and wherever and thinking people are going to vote for you if you don't get out there and pound the pavement. And the preacher bit is all about having your Sunday sermon and making sure you repeat it over and over again until the followers really believe. So, you know, if you do those three things, you'll understand where the organization is and you'll really uncover where you've got blockers.
I love it. I think it's awesome, the three parts. How can a – you talked a little bit about team members and what you look for, right, to see they're on board. What can a young professional do to show you from – coming from the opposite end of the spectrum here, what could they do to show you that not only they're on board, but they're someone that you want to elevate and elevate quickly?
Action orientation, customer service orientation, and a good team member. You can differentiate yourself in any group by first of all being action oriented. You can be the person that's out front looking to make a change, looking to do something different. Posting on our intranet or posting through our app and showing a success story, and that catches somebody's eye. Being somebody who's seen as a valuable team member so that when I come around or when a senior leader comes around and you know people are eager to introduce you to that person. Mm-hmm. And that customer service orientation, whether that's with a customer or that's internally, you know, that's something you either have or you don't have. And if you can be somebody who's customer service oriented, who really wants to help a customer, help a teammate, that will start to differentiate you. Those are the three things. And they show themselves very, very quickly. And I've got great examples here at Blue Line in just my first couple of months where we've elevated people into leadership roles and we've brought new people in who've just exemplified those.
Well, yeah, it's not an always easy for a young person to know where that line is of proactivity, of being. Are you one that believes in do and ask forgiveness later, or ask first and then do?
Well, I think as long as what you're doing is fits in those things that I've talked about, that action orientation, the customer service orientation, you're not going to go wrong. As long as what you're doing, you feel confident, isn't violating some policy or anything like that, then I'm all for people getting out there and just making things happen, you know, and using their creativity. Too often folks don't use their creativity. They just feel like they're in a box. But you know what? If you go out there and you just, you know, try and do what's right, I think things will be okay for you.
One of the things that we talk about a lot is how powerful ideas are for a business in terms of innovation and what's coming next and new ideas. And I have a strong belief that young people, particularly millennials and young professionals, you know, under the age of 33 or 32 years old, have a different lens on where the future is going. Not always. But so many times I think they limit themselves to coming up with those good ideas that are going to help move a business forward, whether they don't feel like it's their place or they're not empowered to do that. What's your initial sense when I mention that to you? Is that something that resonates, or do you think, you know, good ideas come from the top and you're just looking to empower people?
I think that goes to, are you in an environment where brainstorming and idea generation is valued? So one of the things that I've tried to do in my career when we have meetings and when we bring people together is to not have them all just be formal affairs. Make sure that when we're all together, we take the opportunity to brainstorm. We take the opportunity to throw ideas out on the table. And, you know, you can see when we do that, the folks that are comfortable throwing something out there and seeing what happens versus the ones that hold back. And what I can tell you is, first off, try and be part of an organization that believes in that. It's very hard if you work somewhere where you can tell that's just not something that...
Not their culture.
Right. And you know, maybe you're there because that's where you needed to get a job and to build your resume. But ultimately, find organizations and teams that value idea generation and brainstorming, because those are the ones that are constantly going to look to grow and get better. And when you're in that environment, fire away. You know, no one remembers the wallflower,
right?
And in those sessions, in a good brainstorming, there's no bad idea that's thrown out on the table. Ultimately, it's the leader at the table's responsibility to zero in on what the ultimate decision is going to be. But he or she can't do that if enough good ideas aren't thrown on the table.
Yeah.
So in that, I have some sympathy. You've got to be in an organization that fosters it, that gives people that chance. But if you're in one of those, take advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, let's end with some fun stuff. One, are you a consumer? How do you continue to evolve as a leader? Do you do a lot of reading? Do you do a lot of writing? Do you listen to audiobooks or podcasts? What do you do to continue to develop as a leader outside of getting in the field and listening to people? And
so I'm such a fan of technology. So for us, in you know, the time we're in right now, it's amazing. I'm never without my iPad, and I've got everything on there, and I can do everything I need from there, whether it's running my business or my personal life, or you know, consuming data to get smarter and learn more. So you know, I'm constantly in the middle of probably half a dozen books. It's, you know, I'm kind of a terrible reader in that way. I just read everything like little by little. I read a lot of magazines, newspapers online, Twitter. You know, I'm just
You're an evolving leader.
I'm always looking for, you know, different data sources to learn as much as I can, and I consume it in a way that really is, you know, quite effective with the technology that we have today in small chunks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not great at sitting down and just, you know, cracking a book open and reading it for 5 hours. The iPad was built, I think, for me. It just perfectly fits the style that I have, and I'm just constantly picking up little chunks, whether I'm reading something in The Economist, The Wall Street Journal, or Entertainment Weekly.
Full gamut.
Just, you know, I like to just pop in and pick up.
Is there a book that's made a big impact on you that maybe you pass out or you want your people to read? Anything come to mind?
There's a number of different books. I mean, first off, I'm a huge fan of biographies. I realize that they're not always the most exciting things, but they're great, great opportunities to learn. You know, you read a biography of a former president, or you read a biography of a prime minister,
right,
or something like that, and you can learn so much about what those leaders did. And I love hearing the stories and understanding how they got to where they got.
So, is there a leader or somebody in the history of this world that stood out to you as maybe someone that you like to model in your leadership style?
Well, there's a handful of the biographies that have really stuck with me. And just fascinating stories, right? The Lincoln biographies that are out there are fantastic. The Churchill biographies,
right,
are tremendous. The most recent Jobs biography is amazing. Now, none of these people are perfect, right? No one is. And many of them have things that you wouldn't want to emulate. But ultimately, that's up to you to decide what are the pieces of their lives that seem like they're worth trying to understand and how they can help you. And I go on and on. There's so many great biographies out there that I encourage people to read. Business book-wise, there's one book in particular that I've used quite often when I've taken over new teams. It's called You're in Charge, Now What? It's a great book where it walks you through almost a step-by-step of when you take over a new team, what are the things you should do. I've used the methodology quite often, and it works very well. And, you know, since I'm here, to throw a shout-out to solution selling books. I've used those in multiple parts of the world. In Australia, when I ran a sales team there, we turned that business around. It was a business that was going in the wrong direction, and in 3 years, we were able to double the size of it. In Latin America, we put in place in a previous business the solution selling tools, and that worked for us quite well. And we're just on our journey here 2 months in at Blue Line, and what I've branded selling the Blue Line way, and we're using the tools there. So that's another one that I give out quite a bit.
Great. That's awesome. Two fun questions to end. One is, what's harder, to be a CEO and lead a company, or is it to lead at home, lead kids, lead family? What's harder? Or is it just different?
No, I'll tell you, it's the home stuff, because there you get a lot of pushback. the kids don't want to hear, you know, here's the plan, here's how we're going to execute it, and you know, they're not up for KPI tracking and all the rest. In business, if you can put out a good plan for people, make connections with them, and then you know, keep in it with them and hold them accountable, it's definitely easier.
Right.
You know, raising kids is much harder.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there.
Yeah.
And the last thing is, if you had a day to yourself, you're going to remove work, you're going to just have a day for you. Mm-hmm. What are you going to go do?
Well, you know, for me right now, it's I've got young kids. I've got a 10, 8, and a 6-year-old. So anytime I have any free time, I just love doing stuff with them. So that's where I'm at. At some point when they're grown and they don't want to be hanging out with dad, I'll probably want to work on my awful golf game.
Okay,
I like being out there, but I'm terrible right now. At some point, I have a lot more time to play.
I hear you. So, well, thanks for being here. We really appreciate the insight. You shared some great stories. And again, we'll hope to have you again soon.
Thank you for taking the time. Appreciate it.
Good.
All right.
This podcast is brought to you by LearnLoft, an online learning company focused on developing the modern professional. Want to increase your leadership potential? Check out our brand new Getting Leadership Ready program at learnloft.com.